genuine progress indicator is a new way of measuring the health of an economy's, it's a new way of measuring economic well-being, the health of an economy. It's different than, for example, gross domestic product, which really is just how much stuff do we buy, how much money do we circulate, how much things do we create in an economy during a one-year time period. The genuine progress indicator does is it says, okay, well, buying things and material well-being is certainly part of economic health, but it's not the whole picture.
Okay, and did you have a model to work from? Is anyone else using this in other countries? And because we are using an old model from the Depression era.
Yeah, the genuine the gross domestic product was really emerged out of the Great Depression as a way of tracking the size of the macroeconomy. The genuine progress indicator really has its roots in the 1970s and through the 1980s. And the development of something called the Index of Sustainable Economic Well-being. And that was a moment when economists said, wow, GDP is just price times quantity. It was never really meant to be a measure of our well-being, of our economic health. It counts everything as a benefit, nothing as a cost. And so the genuine progress indicator comes into play in the 80s and 90s, and now is being used at the state level in this decade to really count what is the cost and recognize what is the benefit. So, for example, if you have a county or a city or a state that has a very high crime rate, that's good for the gross domestic product because it creates a lot of economic activity as people have to buy locks and security and basically protect themselves or defend themselves from crime. If you have an oil spill, you have to spend money to clean it up. That's good for GDP. If you have a hurricane, you have to rebuild your city. That's good for GDP. So economists decided quite some time ago that this just didn't make sense as a measure of our well-being. Why are we counting costs as benefits? And so that's how the genuine progress indicator emerged over time.
That's a whole different way to be thinking politically, I would think. Overall, when it comes to the people who make the decisions.
It really is. The genuine progress indicator shifts our attention to the quality of development, not just the quantity. When we hear growth rates in the news, when we hear the economy is growing by 1 or 2 or 3%, or shrinking by 1 or 2 or 3%, this gives us no sense of are we doing better. And I think a lot of people would say coming out of the Great Recession that... sure, we're out of the recession, the economy is growing, it's growing at a pretty good pace, but are we doing better? Are the rewards from that growth being broadly shared by the public, and are the costs of that growth greater than the benefits? And that's what GPI gives you a new lens to really understand the full development, the full quality, the full experience of that growth, and whether it is indeed delivering sustainable well-being.
Give me some examples of things that are positives in a GPI.
Yeah, so gross domestic product also doesn't count the use of our time that's not in the labor force. It doesn't count the use of our time at home, taking care of our children or taking care of an elderly parent. It doesn't count the use of our time in the community as volunteers. It also really puts a heavy, heavy premium on labor and basically penalizes leisure. So if you want to be a good economic citizen, you should be working 2, 3, 4 jobs. You should be working 80-hour weeks. You should be sending your kids to daycare. You should not volunteer in your community. Basically, GDP is giving us all the wrong signals of how to be a good society. When GPI tries to estimate the benefits of these other uses of our time, it gives our policymakers, it gives our decisions a weight that gives you a sense of truly the well-being of our economic activity, not simply treating everything as a benefit and nothing as a cost.
What sort of environmental factors would also be positives when you're doing these evaluations?
Yeah, so any good business has to depreciate its capital. So you build a building, you have a car fleet, you have machinery. Part of the annual calculation is, okay, there's a cost to running those things, and those things wear out and they deplete and they have to be replaced over time. When you think of the whole economy, one of our biggest capital bases is the natural environment. Our water, our soils, our food systems, our energy systems, our mines, our materials. We don't, as a nation, depreciate those things over time. It's as if we just draw them down and they just create income, but there's no expense on the balance sheet that charges for that drawdown. So GPI tries to account for that natural capital depreciation. We shouldn't count as a benefit dirtier waters or dirtier air. We shouldn't count as a benefit every time we deplete our non-renewable resources. These are our costs. They're the cost of an expanding economy. And what GPI does is tries to subtract them against the benefits of an expanding economy, all of that economic activity.
What sort of reporting do you look at for those sort of numbers? Those seem like they'd be a little more difficult than getting, you know, manufacturers' numbers.
Yeah, they can be tricky. You know, thankfully, this kind of work goes back now 3 decades. When it comes down to it, the genuine progress indicator is 26 different indicators. And so it requires the same kinds of assumptions that GDP does in terms of a price times a quantity. And so when you look at the cost of air pollution, you have to benchmark that against the quantity, so how much air pollution are we talking about, and then the price. How does air pollution impact our health? How does it impact our infrastructure? How does it impact our daily lives? And so just on that indicator alone, there are health studies on air pollution that go back to the 1970s and a long literature to draw from to really get at some of the economic costs of air pollution.
What's interesting here, too, is you have been working with the state of Vermont. Vermont is actually has decided to make this part of its state policy, as I understand. Could you explain that?
That's right. Vermont is the first state in the country to pass a genuine progress indicator into law. They want to use it as a way to analyze different policies, to look at the state budget, as a way to track the general health of the economy over time and see if we're actually trending up or down. The GPI for the U.S., for example, really topped out in the late 70s and has been flat or in decline, which matches up really well against other types of studies on the happiness, the well-being, the subjective well-being of Americans that has also peaked in the past and has been flat or declining ever since. We did the first state study in about 10 years ago for Vermont, and then the state of Maryland actually built their own GPI account and had made that be part of their government about 3 years ago. And now we're the first state in the country to put it into law. And there's about a dozen other states that have GPI accounts at this point, and we're really seeing a true kind of bottom-up, across the nation, use of an alternative way of measuring the well-being of an economy.
Now, I'm guessing Illinois is not one, because I haven't heard about it here.
I don't believe Illinois has done one. I know Minnesota has. We've done some work in Iowa, Utah, Oregon, of course, Maryland, which has really been leading the way in the last few years. So we're starting to see a group of states kind of give up on Washington, D.C., these kinds of conversations about revising, adjusting, creating alternatives to the GDP in Washington, D.C. have been happening since the 1980s, and now the states are really taking the lead. I'm the first speaker, I believe, in a Bioneers series that's being hosted by McHenry County College, and I'm going to trying things off with a real honest look at our economy. How is our economy doing in terms of delivering broadly shared prosperity and sustainable well-being? And what kind of an economics might we need in the 21st century that would be quite different than the economics of the 20th century? If the 20th century was about growth and about expansion and about industrialization and about this great American experiment post-World War II. 21st century is probably something different. It's going to be about more the quality of the development, the ability of the economy to share in well-being more broadly, the ability of the economy to not erode its foundations, its natural capital base. Can we create the kind of economy that is going to basically get us through this century? Or are the costs really piling up, and are they greater than the benefits? I hope you get a chance to talk a bit about climate change, because that is the real game changer right now. As you know, in Illinois, as with much of the rest of the country, last year was a pretty hot year. I saw that Illinois broke more than 150 heat records last year, and July 2012 was the hottest month ever recorded in the U.S. So this is a direct consequence of an economic system that is broken, an economic system that is creating more costs than benefits, an economic system that over the long haul may not be sustainable. And so I hope we can kick off this Bioneers series with a real frank discussion about how are we doing? And is this kind of economy and the kind of economics that we use to study the economy on the right course?